Good afternoon, everyone. Just bring up the right screen here and we'll get going. There we go. All right, good afternoon, everyone. This is the Thursday, October 29th, 2020 afternoon session of the Portland City Council. Good afternoon, Keelan. Please call the roll.
Good afternoon, Mayor. Hugh Daly. Fritz.
Here.
Ryan.
Here.
Hardesty. Wheeler.
Here. Under Portland City Code and state law, the City Council is holding this meeting electronically. All members of the Council are attending remotely by video and teleconference, and the City has made several avenues available for the public to listen to the audio broadcast of this meeting. The meeting is available to the public on the city's YouTube channel, eGovPDX, www.portlandoregon.gov/video, and channel 30. The public can also provide written testimony to the council by emailing the council clerk at cctestimony@portlandoregon.gov. The council is taking these steps as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic and the need to limit in-person contact and to promote physical distancing. The pandemic is an emergency that threatens the public health, safety, and welfare, which requires us to meet remotely by electronic communications. Thank you all for your continued patience, flexibility, and understanding as we manage through this difficult situation to do the city's business. We'll now hear from legal counsel on the rules of order and decorum. Lindley, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, everyone. To participate in council meetings, you may sign up in advance with the council clerk's office for communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions or the first readings of ordinances. The published council agenda at portlandoregon.gov/auditor contains information about how and when you may sign up for testimony while City Council is holding electronic meetings. Your testimony today should address the matter being considered. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you're a lobbyist. If you're representing an organization, please identify it. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When your time is up, the presiding officer will ask you to conclude. Disruptive conduct such as shouting, refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up, or interrupting others' testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being placed on hold or ejected from the remainder of the electronic meeting. Please be aware that all council meetings are recorded. Thank you.
All right, thank you. We have one item for this afternoon relating to the tree code, item number 866. Please read that for us, Keelan.
Amend trees and development situations code to remove zone exemptions from tree preservation and tree density and amend regulations for preservation of private trees.
Commissioner Ryan.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. Good afternoon, everyone. I am thrilled to frame this for us a bit. Here's some opening remarks. This is Title 11, the tree code. It's one tool used to meet the goals set forth in the urban forest management plan, including increased tree canopy, enhanced urban forest through development and redevelopment, and consistent and clear regulation. On January 8th, the City Council passed a resolution directing Bureau of Development Services, together with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability and Parks Urban Forestry, to conduct stakeholder engagement, analysis, and legal review regarding specific possible changes to the tree code in development situations. Specifically, City Council asked staff to look at amendments that would apply tree code preservation, tree density requirements in four zones where they are currently exempt: central commercial, central employment, general industrial one, and heavy industrial for private trees and trees on city-owned or managed properties. Reduce a key threshold for tree preservation of private trees from 36 inches in diameter to 20 inches in diameter, where trees must be preserved, or a mitigation fee paid based on an inch per inch calculation. The project presents opportunities to protect existing tree canopy, increase tree canopy in areas with high heat indexes and near to BIPOC communities and people with low incomes. Maintaining and increasing tree canopy is linked with environmental and public health benefits in a strategy to combat the effects of climate change. At the same time, this project presents an opportunity to continue preserving enough land to accommodate projected industrial employment, which is often compromised, which is often comprised of middle income jobs, which have their own socioeconomic and public health benefits. Today, we will hear a summary of the project and recommendations from the Urban Forestry Commission and Planning and Sustainability Commission. I would like to begin this by introducing Emily Sandy from the Bureau of Development Services for the beginning of this 30-minute presentation. Take it away, Emily.
Commissioner Ryan, before we do that, do you have a substitute ordinance you want to put on the table? And if so, would you like to make the motion?
Yes, I thought that motion was coming from you, I think. Do you have a motion?
I'd be happy to, yes.
Yes.
I'd like to move the substitute ordinance.
Second.
And I second, yeah, second.
Okay, we have a motion to move the substitute ordinance. Commissioner Fritz, I believe you seconded that just 1 second ahead of Dan.
Yeah.
And Keelan, is there any further discussion, or I should ask my colleagues, is there any further discussion on the motion? Seeing none, Keelan, please call the roll on the substitute.
Fritz.
Okay. Well, thank you to them.
Oh, sorry. Did I hear Commissioner Udaly?
Yeah.
Oh, there's
Clay.
Okay. Sorry. Sorry
it's
about okay. that.
It's not again.
Okay. Udaly.
Aye.
Fritz.
Thank you to the mayor and his staff for working on this substitute, which responds to community input. It makes some improvements, and I'm sure that Emily Sandy will go through those. Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The substitute is on the table. Thank you, colleagues. And back to the presentation.
Okay. Emily, Sandy, you're good? There you are. Good afternoon, Emily. And do the old unmute. Yeah.
I think I'd get a hang of that by now. Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler and City Council. I'm Emily Sandy. I'm a code and policy analyst with the Bureau of Development Services. And we are going to discuss the project that Commissioner Ryan laid out in his opening remarks. Summarize the recommendations of the Planning and Sustainability Commission and the Urban Forestry Commission on this project. You also hear from those commission members at the opening of testimony as invited testimony. I'm gonna give roughly a 30-minute presentation. It's long and a little dense, so I'm gonna pause a couple of times during the presentation in case you have any questions, and you can of course ask them at the end. And then I will, after the presentation, I'll go through what I understand is the changes in the substitute ordinance for you. So again, I'm Emily Sandy. Development Services is the lead on this project, given the subject matter of trees and development situations. However, we worked really collaboratively with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability and Parks and Rec Urban Forestry. There's several staff here today. Everyone has such wonderful, discrete areas of expertise. So I want to acknowledge them and let you know that they're here to help answer questions. So from Planning and Sustainability, Joe Zender, Sally Edmonds, Tom Armstrong, Jeff Cottle, and Steve Kuntz. From Parks Urban Forestry Division, City Forester Jen Cairo, Nick Desai and Brian Lando, and then from BDS, myself and Kimberly Talent, and also want to acknowledge Ken Ray, the PIO that did a lot of work on this project. So I'm going to share my screen here. Okay. All right, can everybody see that? Just making sure.
Yep, looks good.
Okay. All right, so some background. In January, last fall, going back a little bit further, you recall we came to you with a proposal on extending a sunset date for a required preservation or inch per inch mitigation for 36 inch trees, which was originally adopted in 2016. We were asking to extend that sunset date. As part of that project, the Planning and Sustainability Commission and the Urban Forestry Commission added some additional additional recommendations to remove the requirements, the exemptions for tree preservation and tree density in the four zones that Commissioner Ryan mentioned. Those are central employment, central commercial, general industrial one, and heavy industrial. And also to reduce this key threshold that was at 36 inches to 20 inches. And that threshold, I will explain a little bit more what that means in the coming slides. It also directed Portland Parks and Recreation to develop a scope of work for a broader Title 11 project to be brought back to City Council for consideration. We're not discussing that in detail today. That will come at a later date. So we're addressing the first two bullet points today. To summarize right off the bat, the Planning and Sustainability Commission and the Urban Forestry Commission both present recommendations to City Council for their consideration. The Planning and Sustainability Commission recommends removing exemptions from tree preservation and tree density on private and city-owned or managed land in three of the four zones discussed: central employment, central commercial, and general industrial one, but retain the same exemptions in the heavy industrial zone. They recommended reducing that key threshold from 36 inches to 20 inches. They also added a directive for City Council, and this is reflected in the original ordinance. It's been amended a little bit in the substitute ordinance for BPS to evaluate tree preservation and density exemptions for the heavy industrial zones as part of the upcoming economic opportunities analysis. And I will explain a little bit more about that later. The code language in Exhibit A reflects the Planning and Sustainability Commission recommendation, and their recommendation letter is in Exhibit E. The Urban Forestry Commission recommendation was to remove the exemptions for tree preservation and tree density in all four of the zones, including heavy industrial. Like the PSC, the Urban Forestry Commission recommended reducing that key threshold from 36 inches to 20 inches. Diameter, breast height. I need to pause a minute and explain what DBH means. DBH is diameter, breast height, and that's the diameter of a tree measured at 4.5 feet above the ground. They also had some thoughts about specific guidance for the update of the economic opportunities analysis, and that it must advance climate equity and environmental justice in alignment with city goals and policies, including aggressive action to mitigate and prepare for climate change and its inequitable impacts on low-income and BIPOC communities. The Urban Forestry Commission's recommendation is reflected in code language in Exhibit B, and their recommendation letter is in Exhibit D. So when it comes time to vote, whoever is making the initial motion will need to specify whether you're voting on or starting from Exhibit E, A, the PSC recommendation, or Exhibit D, the UFC recommendation. So backing up a little bit, I just want to explain a little bit how the current tree code works. For preservation of private trees in development situations. The code currently requires that at least one third of the healthy, otherwise not exempt trees 12 inches DBH or greater must be preserved, or a fee must be paid to mitigate for the loss of the trees. The fee for trees that are 12 to 20 inches and 20 to 36 inches is currently valued at $1,800 and $3,600 respectively. And this is based on the city's cost to plant and establish either two or four mitigation trees respectively elsewhere. There are some exemptions for certain types of industrial and commercial development, specifically trees located in EX, CX, IG1, and IH are exempt from tree preservation requirements. And that exemption applies to both private trees and trees on city-owned or managed sites. Tree density is basically a certain baseline number of trees required on a site. The calculation to determine the number of trees is a function of the site size and the use of the property, with residential uses requiring the highest level of tree density and industrial uses the lowest. Tree density requirements can be met by preserving or planting trees, or again, paying a fee in lieu. The fee in lieu is based on planting one and a half inch medium canopy tree per tree required. And that is currently valued by the Urban Forestry fee schedule at $675 per tree. Similar to tree preservation, sites, both private sites and city owned or managed sites in EX, CX, IG1, and IH are exempt from tree density requirements. And I also want to note there are other exemptions in Title 11 for both tree preservation and tree density, and this project is not dealing with those. We're specifically dealing with the zone exemptions. Now, where does the fee in lieu, or often referred to as a mitigation fee, where does that go? Mitigation fees go to the city's tree planting and preservation fund. This fund can be used for tree planting as well as preserving trees through easement or property acquisition. The use of the fund is guided by the citywide tree planting strategy developed in 2018 by Parks Urban Forestry, which is called Growing a More Equitable Urban Forest. And the strategy aims to increase tree canopy throughout the city in areas where it is needed most. It specifically prioritizes tree planting in neighborhoods that are both low income and low canopy. Industrial zones are not an identified priority area, largely because the strategy focuses the limited amount of funds available to areas where underserved communities live, and housing is not allowed in industrial zones, though it can be located adjacent to industrial zones. So we've been talking a lot about these four zones. So this map shows the location of the zones that are the subject of this project. The pink areas show the IH, or heavy industrial zone. Purple, yellow, and red areas indicate general industrial one, central commercial, and central employment, respectively. As you can see, CX and EX, central employment and central commercial, are generally located in and near the central city and gateway. General industrial one is located sort of surrounding the central city and the Brooklyn rail yard. And the heavy industrial zone is generally located along the north reach of the Willamette River and the western parts of the Columbia corridor. For a little information about the services that trees provide as essential infrastructure, urban trees provide a multitude of well-researched and established environmental and public health services. You might be familiar with the environmental services, which are improving air quality, storing carbon, reducing stormwater burden on waterways, and creating wildlife habitat. Additionally, urban canopy significantly improves public and community health. Some examples: city trees improve road and pedestrian safety, reduce crimes, increase business activity, improve respiratory and cardiovascular health, improve healthy birth outcomes, and coping mechanisms to stress. Structural value estimates the replacement of the tree and a partial approximation of the value of the services lost when a tree is removed. This table illustrates the structural value of a broadleaf deciduous tree in three different size categories, 24, 32, and 40 inches DVH, and in residential and industrial areas. reducing the size threshold for inch per inch mitigation from 36 inches to 20 inches brings the cost of mitigation closer to the structural value of the tree, but does not match the investment in most cases. The following two maps show urban heat islands within the, or show the urban heat index within the currently exempt zones. As you will see, the heat index is high in much of the IH zone, a little lower towards the confluence of our two main rivers. The heat index is lower in much of the central city, which again is comprised mostly of CX and EX, but higher in the central east side, where there is a mix of CX, EX, and the general industrial one zones, and the Brooklyn Yard area, which is mostly general industrial one. Now for some information about tree canopy and distribution in Portland, which highlights the needs to increase tree canopy in certain areas. Citywide canopy is just over 30%, but this is not distributed equitably. The west side canopy is 56%, while the east side canopy is 21%. And on the west side, if you exclude Forest Park, the west side canopy is still 44%. Current distribution of trees is uneven and is directly linked to income. Affluent west side neighborhoods have significantly more tree canopy, while east side and lower income neighborhoods have less. Communities of color, low income, refugee, and immigrant communities are also generally located in areas that are characterized with lower amounts of tree canopy. Should also note that areas with steep slopes or that are protected through other means, such as environmental zoning, also contribute to canopy levels. Here, in comparison to the previous slide, we can see that populations of color are more likely to reside in low canopy neighborhoods, particularly in North and Northeast Portland. And particularly in North and Northeast Portland, neighborhoods with a higher percentage of communities of color, and they are adjacent to industrial zones in some cases. Just want to note that this data is represented on the neighborhood level. And again, Portland's industrial zones do not allow housing. However, housing can be adjacent to industrial zones.
Emily?
Yep.
Could you go back? I'm just comparing these two maps. It's so fascinating, right? Okay. How about the other one? One you're on now. Yeah. All right. I want to play with that. It really does tell a story, right?
Yeah. It's a easy visual representation.
Yeah, the colors are obviously, the shades are different in how we tell the story, but it really, when you cross-pollinate them, it's really fascinating and powerful visual. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. And I was actually gonna pause here before I get into the economic analysis piece of this project. So are there any questions you have thus far?
I'm not seeing any. Emily, it looks like you're good to go.
Okay. All right. A major parameter of our analysis includes maintaining compliance with statewide planning goal 9, economic development. Goal 9 requires local governments to demonstrate there's an adequate inventory of developable industrial and employment land to accommodate forecasted economic growth over short-term and 20-year horizons. This supply is analyzed in a state-mandated economic opportunities analysis, or EOA, which is performed by the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. The city's EOA was most recently updated as part of the 2035 Comprehensive Plan and was adopted in 2016. The EOA estimates the 20-year supply and demand for employment land in the city by geography and land use types, and uses a buildable land inventory, or BLI, that identifies specific properties that are most likely to redevelop over that 20-year period. Once the 20-year land supply is identified, local governments must monitor the availability of that land supply to ensure that the projected demand can still be met. If the land supply is reduced to a level below the 20-year demand projected in the EOA, the local government then becomes out of compliance with Goal 9. To estimate the supply of land available, development constraints are incorporated into the analysis. Development constraints can be constraints that reduce the physical land available for development, such as steep slopes and wetlands. They may also be regulatory constraints like environmental overlay zones or floodplains. They may also be financial constraints that may affect the market in a way that reduces the probability that the land will be developed. And examples of this include the cost of a brownfield cleanup or the cost to provide public sewer or water to a site. This project essentially conducted a discrete EOA-like analysis using the land supply adopted in 2016 and the effect of other subsequent code changes since then as a baseline for land supply. The analysis then factored in the additional cost of the potential regulatory changes to the tree code as development constraints. The first step in the analysis was to do a tree canopy analysis to estimate the frequency of trees in different tree size categories, to estimate the diameters of trees located on industrially zoned lands that are currently exempt from tree preservation and density requirements. Environmental consulting firm SWCA was hired to complete a GIS analysis. SWCA staff also used existing Portland Parks tree inventories and site visits to 8 industrial sites to calibrate the model and achieve an acceptable statistical significance. I trip over that every time. For all other zones, project staff reviewed the past 2 years worth of development permits to estimate composition and distribution of tree sizes. Using the outcomes of the tree canopy analysis, Johnson Economics completed an economic analysis to assess the potential impacts of the proposals on the availability of industrial lands that is required by Goal 9. They estimated the impact of the removal of tree preservation and tree density exemptions in those 4 zones, as well as reducing the preservation threshold from 36 inches to 20 inches for inch per inch mitigation fee and required preservation. In all of the areas where tree preservation applies, and also did an analysis not only on the impact to the availability of industrial land, but also to quantify the effect on housing production and housing cost. The analysis focuses on lands with tree canopy, defined as vacant or underutilized in the buildable lands inventory. It doesn't look at all land, it looks at the vacant or underutilized lands that are already in the buildable land inventory. And this means that portions of sites already in environmental or at Greenway River overlay zones are excluded. While the tree code regulations can be physical or cost-related development constraints, as I mentioned earlier, for purposes of this analysis, we assume that fees in lieu of preservation or planting would be paid and looked at it from the perspective of a financial constraint. This was primarily due to the difficulty of estimating physical area impacts, getting the variety of different site conditions, numbers of trees and conditions of trees, and development needs of individual sites. It was also difficult to estimate the choices that applicants would make to meet the requirements, whether they would choose to preserve and plant or pay a fee in lieu. Again, as I mentioned earlier, the analysis focused on lands with tree canopy identified as vacant or underutilized in the buildable lands inventory. These were analyzed to narrow in on the areas that would be affected by the changes. The four exempt zones, specifically the acreage of these areas analyzed, are reflected in the third column, acres with canopy. IH zone, heavy industrial, has 59% of the total acreage of the four zones. The IH zone has 60% of tree canopy acreage in those zones at 56 acres. In total, 94 acres were analyzed in the four exempt zones. Though not shown here, note that there are an additional 137 acres of tree canopy on private property in the IH zone that's not currently within the BLI or within the environmental zone. And so at this time, land containing this tree canopy, since it's not in the BLI, is not expected to be developed over the next about 20 years. The next two maps just show this more visually. So they show the exempt zones with existing tree canopy identified in the green, if you can see that. Areas in the BLI that were analyzed are shown in brown and blue. And the red hatch areas that look pinkish at the scale are areas, places where other environmental protections already exist, such as greenway or environmental zones. And they were not included again in this analysis because they're not part of the buildable lands inventory. This map is the same as the previous map, but CX, EX, and IG1 are shown in peach, purple, and yellow. Rather than gray, as the heavy industrial land was shown previously. Together, these maps show where tree canopy is located at sites that are expected to develop over the next 20 years. It should be noted that much of this tree canopy, and especially in the Central Sea, is located within the right-of-way and would not be impacted by the current proposals. This chart is a little dense. It was something that the Planning and Sustainability Commission asked for at their briefing and that we put together for them subsequently and just helps to provide a little bit more context to the total acreage, the acreages with tree canopy, and then the acreages within the BLI with tree canopy that were analyzed. There are 7,463 acres total in the four exempt zones. Of that, 1,488 acres are within the BLI, and that contains 253 acres of tree canopy. BLI acres with tree canopy comprise 3.4% of total acreage in the exempt zones. It's about 253 of 7,463 acres. BLI acres with tree canopy comprise 47% of total acres of tree canopy. So almost half of the existing tree canopy within these zones is within the BLI. Overall, tree canopy covers 6.8 of all heavy industrial zone sites, and 42.6% of that total heavy industrial canopy is located on BLI sites. Tree canopy on heavy industrial BLI sites makes up 62% of the total tree canopy in all four exempt zones. What this table doesn't show in the note is that some of these areas, again, are already subject to environmental overlay zone regulations and greenway as well, and that's highlighted in this table. So this chart calls out total acres within other areas of environmental protection, including environmental greenway or river overlay zones. These are not within the BLI, so were not analyzed and are not expected to develop or redevelop over the next 20 years. They total 186 acres in the four zones, and 152 acres are within the industrial zone specifically. So together with the previous chart, there are 369 tree canopy acres within the IH. So roughly 41% of tree canopy acres within the heavy industrial zone are already protected by some other environmental protections. All right, now for the outcomes of the economic analysis. The economic analysis determined that removing the exemptions for tree preservation and heavy industrial would be expected to result in a reduction in the amount of industrial land available for development over the next 20 years to a level below the state mandated minimum. The current capacity in the combined harbor access lands and harbor airport districts is 10 acres. Modeling estimated a reduction of 11.8 acres. Would result in the removal of the tree preservation exemption and heavy industrial, an additional 11.9 acres due to the removal of the tree density exemption and heavy industrial, for a combined reduction of 23.7 acres in heavy industrial. I will say we tried to get to a point where we could see if in heavy industrial you could remove one exemption, maybe for tree preservation, but not remove another exemption, maybe from tree density or vice versa. But it turns out with this data that if you remove one of them, you're below the required land supply. In the IG1, CX, and EX zones, it was determined that removal of the exemptions and coupled with a reduction of the preservation threshold to 20 inches for private property would have some impact on future development and employment. That impact would not reduce the availability of developable land below the required 20-year supply. It was also determined that a reduction in the tree preservation threshold to 20 inches would result in a small but not significant increase in housing costs on a macro level at 0.11% of total construction costs for new construction over 20 years and result in 54 fewer dwelling units over the next 20 years. And those dwelling units could be lost in single dwelling, plexes, multi-dwelling, or mixed use. They could cross the gamut, and it's not just single dwelling.
Can I ask a question on that point right there? And I realize this is technical and it's thick, but that's a headline to me. They're buried on page, whatever page we are. No significant impact on housing costs, and over a 20-year time frame, 54 units is actually de minimis. Is this analysis widely accepted as being an accurate baseline analysis?
Well, it's accepted among staff, and I have not heard any actual criticisms of the analysis itself. So I think it is accepted. I will note that the impact can vary significantly from site to site. You know, you could have some sites where there's absolutely no impact because there's no trees or small trees, mm-hmm. and some sites that are heavily treated and there's a lot of impact. But how the analysis accounted for that is that's how the 54 dwelling units lost, that's where that comes from. So there would be some situations where it might be cost prohibitive to develop, and that's why we would lose 54 dwelling units over 20 years.
Okay, and I hate to be a stickler. Could I ask, who did the analysis? Is that internal done by the city, or did we hire an outside vendor to do that?
That was Johnson Economics.
Ah, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Good, thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. Industrial lands and middle wage jobs. Providing adequate land supply for employment, and in particular industrial employment, is important. The preservation of adequate industrial capacity ensures the availability of middle wage jobs. Workers of color are underrepresented in the region's high wage occupations and overrepresented in the low wage occupations. Given this, the region's wage polarized growth trends
disproportionately impact workers of color and contributes to racial income disparities. Among middle and high-wage occupations, industrial jobs stand out as the only major occupation group in the Portland region that is occupied by proportionately more workers of color than workers that identify as white alone. Middle-waged industrial occupations are also unique in that they can result in higher paying jobs long-term by offering higher starting wages, more benefits and job ladder careers relative to low-wage occupations. Given the demographics of these workers, this benefit can be an important stepping stone for communities of color. Certainly, a more equitable future provides access to all job types and wage classifications, and ensuring availability of middle wage jobs is just one piece of an overall strategy to address systematic racism. So before I get into some possible outcomes and our community engagement strategy, were there any questions and more questions on the economic analysis piece?
I'm not seeing anybody raise their hand, Emily.
Okay. All right. So, as I mentioned before, it's difficult to predict choices that people will make. However, we used some data collected from the tree canopy, and using the data we collected from the tree canopy analysis and coupled with outcomes that we measured of the 2016 amendment that established that current preservation threshold for required preservation and inch per inch mitigation at 36 inches. We established some simple predictions for outcomes on future tree preservation and mitigation fees. The 2016 amendment did have success in decreasing the number of 36 inch trees removed by 64%. And that percentage increase in overall rate of preservation is reflected and projected here. There are several reasons why these projections might not be accurate. Regarding the tree size threshold, there are just simply more 20 to 36 inch trees than there are 36 inch or greater trees, which could increase the likelihood that more of these trees would be removed. On the other hand, smaller trees have smaller root protection zones, and the area, the physical area that you need around the tree to preserve it, which would decrease the likelihood that trees in that category would be removed. The rate of preservation in general industrial one and heavy industrial zones could be lower due to other existing exemptions. However, other site variables could contribute to a higher rate of preservation, including the location of trees on large sites, which tend to be in groves or in parking areas where they are less likely to be impacted by buildings. Overall, we can say with confidence that the rate of preservation and the amount of fees in lieu in preservation will both increase. However, it's difficult to predict to what levels. I'm going to talk a little bit about our community engagement strategy, which was one focus, one of the reasons you actually wanted us to proceed with this project beyond what came to City Council in January. So our community engagement plan has three main components. We interviewed 27 individuals representing a variety of organizations and interests. There was broad recognition that the tree code is too complicated, a desire for equitable outcomes in tree canopy distribution. There was a lack of clarity among those stakeholders on how the tree planting and preservation fund is spent. And there was concern about how the tree code interfaces with other city plans and policies such as housing affordability, infill development, and other sustainability and environmental initiatives. There were more than 2,000 respondents to an initial survey that illustrated several areas that have broad support. This survey was meant just to sort of gauge community interests and priorities. Nearly all the respondents expressed support for preserving and planting more trees in industrial commercial areas, particularly those in close proximity to the Willamette River, Columbia Slough, Columbia River, or other environmentally sensitive natural areas. Most of those surveyed also support using mitigation fees to improve environmental and health outcomes, preserve more trees, and support the planting of new trees elsewhere. Fewer respondents cited economic development and reducing regulation as an interest, though many noted that these are not priorities that are mutually exclusive with increasing tree canopy. I do want to note that respondents were heavily weighed towards self-identifying as having an interest in environmental advocacy. Finally, we held an online community forum to present draft staff proposal and report with an additional survey on the specific proposals, and also an opportunity for general comments. Survey responses were almost 85% to 15% in favor of removing the preservation and density exemptions in IG1EX and CX and reducing the size threshold to 20 inches. And vice versa for retaining the exemptions in IH. There was some input from a coalition of business organizations, the Home Builders Association, the Home Business Alliance, and the Columbia Corridor Association, that discussed concerns about the cost of development and concerns about the cost of mitigating for trees in certain circumstances where they're required to be removed. We also heard from Audubon and a lot of other community members that expressed appreciation for the work done, but disappointment and frustration with retaining what was the staff proposal of retaining the exemptions in the heavy industrial zone. The written and verbal testimony submitted to the Planning and Sustainability Commission and the Urban Forestry Commission is much the same. All right, so I'm just going to recap the recommendations again. The Planning and Sustainability Commission recommendation is to remove exemptions for tree preservation and tree density in IG1, CX, and EX zones for private trees and trees on city-owned managed property, to retain the same tree preservation and tree density exemptions in the IH or heavy industrial zone, to reduce the key preservation threshold from 36 inches to 20 inches in diameter. Overall, sites must continue to preserve at least one third of healthy non-nuisance trees over 12 inches in diameter. If these 12 to 20 inches are used to meet that standard, the fee in lieu of preservation would remain at $1,800 per tree for the cost to plant two mitigation trees. And all trees 20 inches or greater would be required to be preserved or pay an inch per inch mitigation fee. And those trees could be used to meet that one-third standard. And as I mentioned before, they have a specific directive with expectations for evaluating the exemptions for heavy industrial zone through the upcoming economic opportunities analysis. The Urban Forestry Commission recommendation is much the same, except that they recommend to also remove the tree preservation and tree density exemptions for private trees and city-owned or managed trees in the IH zone, as well as the other three zones. They also recommend reducing that threshold from 36 to 20 inches. And they also encourage specific considerations for evaluation in an upcoming EOA. I want to highlight future opportunities for thinking about the Title 11 exemptions and tree canopy overall in the heavy industrial zone. Increasing tree canopy to mitigate climate change while protecting our most vulnerable communities and providing economic growth and job opportunity is important. Future work to address tree canopy in heavy industrial zones must work towards a solution that meets both these goals. Reevaluation of this exemption or identifying other ways to increase canopies in the IH zone will be a part of the update to the economic opportunities analysis undertaken by BPS and could potentially guide a future broader Title 11 tree code project. Both the PSC and the UFC, as I mentioned, have provided guidance and their recommendations. And in the case of the Planning and Sustainability Commission, as a specific directive in the ordinance to undertake this in the EOA update. BPS's work on the update has begun, and this process usually takes about 2 years. The updated EOA will incorporate a number of new environmental considerations, including updated BES wetland inventory data and environmental overlay zone map corrections, and also include looking at the tree requirements on IH zone then. And then I want to remind you, specified in a January City Council resolution, urban forestry is tasked with developing a scope of work for a broader update of the tree code, and is in the phases of developing that scope now. That project is not specifically funded currently, however, and your advocacy is appreciated. Any post changes to the IH zone requirements of the tree code could be coordinated with and incorporated into the EOA. Thanks for your time and your patience. I want to remind you that the Planning and Sustainability Commission recommendation is Exhibit A. The Urban Forestry Commission recommendation is Exhibit B. Did you want me to go over the substitute ordinance now, or did Commissioner Fritz want to go over that, or how do you want to, or the mayor, how do you want to do that?
Commissioner Fritz has a suggestion.
Thank you, Emily, for that presentation. If you're tired of talking, let me just say one piece of it, and then you can fill in what I miss. Okay. One of the pieces is that when we had the resolution back in January, there was a directive for Portland Park and Recreation to come back by December 7th with a scope of work for an overall update of the tree code. And due to COVID and various other challenges, that's not yet ready. And so one of the things in the substitute is to change the due date of that update to March 31st, and also to include a that they would the council will consider funding for the scope of work during the 2021-22 city budget process. That scope of work could also include further work on the IH zone. There are other additions in response to community testimony regarding the economic opportunities analysis and making sure that that's done as a priority for the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. You want to add anything that I missed, please, Emily?
No, I think that covers that timeline. The other substitute was a change to the directive that the Planning and Sustainability Commission recommended. And I just had an opportunity to look at that briefly, but I can read that. I think it's in the substitute ordinance under Directive C. And what that is, says is the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability will evaluate the Title 11 tree preservation and density exemptions for IH as part of the economic opportunities analysis update, consistent with city goals, including those related to tree canopy, environmental health, climate change, and urban heat islands. The EOA shall also analyze equitable public health and environmental justice, especially for those who are essential workers, those who are Black, Indigenous, and people of color, and community members working in or living adjacent to the IH zone. The Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, Bureau of Development Services, and Portland Parks and Recreation shall also bring to Council viable strategies to reduce the urban heat island effect and create and maintain a healthy urban tree canopy within the IH zone concurrent with the completion of the updated EOA.
Thank you very much. There was also some discussion as the offices were all working together on this substitute ordinance under the mayor's direction to just address the issue that Goal 9 doesn't work if you're a landlocked jurisdiction. And so we've added a whereas that says basically that on the recommendation of Government Relations Director Elizabeth Edwards. We didn't add a directive on that because we're going to be able to discuss it in our upcoming legislative agenda setting priorities session that's coming up very shortly. I see that Lindley Rees has a hand up.
Lindley, go ahead.
Just a question or clarification either for Commissioner Fritz or Emily. Am I right in seeing in the substitute ordinance that council would choose either the language in Directive B or the language in Directive C since those are somewhat overlapping?
Hang on.
I suppose hearing no answer, maybe we could staff and I can talk about that outside.
I'm sorry, I was having difficulty muting, unmuting, and got confused. So I was chatting away merrily to myself and wondered why nobody said, "Wow, that's a very profound thing to say." They are the result of the offices working together. They're a bit duplicative, but I don't think they conflict. So yes. If you'd like to, Lindley, while we're working and hearing testimony, if you have some suggestions for combining, some of the language was really important to community members, so we want to make sure we get it right.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner.
That would be helpful. Could I just jump in one other issue here? And Emily, thank you very, very much for the presentation. That was thorough and it was great. I want to thank the city staff from three very, very busy bureaus for their hard work on this package of ordinance changes. And I especially want to thank you, Emily, for your incredible work on behalf of the Bureau of Development Services to focus on the two areas of study in Title 11 in light of multiple emergencies that we're currently confronting. And I also want to thank our staff from the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, Parks and Recreation, and the City Attorney's Office for working together with BDS, and frankly, with so many community members who are really passionate about a healthy tree canopy to evaluate the potential changes to Title 11. I also want to acknowledge the hard work of the Planning and Sustainability Commission and the Urban Forestry Commission for hearing staff's presentation, raising really good questions, and proposing options for the council's action today. I'd also like to introduce a perceived problem that I've heard may be happening in some limited circumstances. And I'm concerned about a particular scenario I've heard of where the city directs a developer that they have to build a water or sewer line in a specific location on the property. And as a result, trees have to be torn down and removed. The city then requires a fee to be paid for that tree if it's over 36 inches, or if the city council approves this change, it would be 20 inches in diameter. For me, it just strikes me as a case where the city should not require this mitigation fee if the tree is being chopped down and removed only because of our own city's regulations. So I'd like to know whether this line of reasoning that I'm hearing about is, how real is it? Colleagues, would you be willing to hear any testimony that may come about in this potential problem, and whether or not it's substantial enough for staff to potentially draft an amendment for when we rehear this in 2 weeks? Would anybody object to us potentially hearing about this issue? Commissioner Fritz?
No.
Yeah, go ahead.
We had some discussions about that with your staff and mine, and we didn't think that we could get that analysis done in 2 weeks because the utility bureaus are involved as well. So our recommendation is to have that come back in at the end of March, along with the scope of work for Title 11. There's also another issue that you and your staff raised about we could voluntarily apply the tree code on IH land that is owned by the city. And again, that's something that could come back in by the end of March.
Good, good feedback. Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. Commissioner Daly.
I was just gonna say that I certainly support allowing staff to explore this if our conservation partners are on board and if staff feels like it's worthwhile. I think there's two questions though. One is, can there be any flexibility with the placement of various utilities that might require a tree to be removed? And in this, under the circumstances where there is no flexibility and a tree must be removed, then should we assess a fee?
Yeah, and I'm asking an even more fundamental question, which is how real an issue is this? And that's in public testimony from people, whether this is a real issue that they've directly experienced, and if so, could they tell us a little bit about that?
I mean, I'm gonna give my fairly off the cuff, uninformed opinion, which is perhaps we shouldn't charge them a fee, but I still think they should be required to plant. They're developing property, having an impact to the canopy. We know that we need trees. That's where I'm at, but I certainly wouldn't oppose
it. Good perspective. Commissioner Fritz, did you have your hand up again? I can't tell, sorry.
I did, thank you. As we heard in the discussion on Tuesday at the work session regarding individual metering, there is a committee led by Transportation, the Streets 2035, that's been working for a couple of years on this. Actually, the city staff have been working on it as long as I've been on the council, probably longer. So it's definitely something that does need to be fixed, and which is not entirely obvious to fix. I also just want to go back to Lindley's point about the two directives. This is my mistake. The B was superseded by C. So we just want C, but then add on at the end, the EOA update must be expedited as a priority for BPS. And I will move that amendment so we can get things on the table and get comments.
Lindley, did you catch that?
I heard it, but if you could say it a little more slowly, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, Commissioner. Go ahead.
Delete Directive B, go with Directive C, and add on at the end, the EOA analysis must be expedited as a priority for BPS.
Got it.
Okay, that's a motion. Do I have a second?
Yes.
Commissioner Ryan, it looks like you're trying to second it.
Yeah, second. Sorry.
Very good. All right. We have a motion from Commissioner Fritz. Thank you, Commissioner Fritz, for clarifying that. Commissioner Ryan seconds. And we'll go ahead and Commissioner Fritz, would you like us to call the roll or keep it open?
It's a technical amendment, so I think we can just call the roll.
I think so as well. Keelan, please call the roll on the amendment proposed by Commissioner Fritz.
You Daly.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The amendment passes. And Keelan, I noticed that when you key your mic, there's a little bit of a delay, and it tends to cut off Commissioner Udaly when in the roll call. If you could key it and then just wait a second and then speak, I think it'll stop cutting it off.
Oh, of course. Thanks.
Thanks, Keelan. I appreciate it. The amendment passes, by the way. All right, I guess we're ready for public testimony. Everybody's looking at my box. It's like a bad Brady Bunch, isn't it? All right. Keelan, how many folks do we have signed up for public testimony this afternoon?
It looks like we have 17 people on the call to testify.
All right, if everybody could please keep it within 2 minutes, we would appreciate it. And Keelan will call you, and if you can just state your name for the record, please.
Okay, first up, we have Solomon Duke.
Good afternoon.
Mayor, Commissioner Ryan, we actually have invited testimony first from the Urban Forestry Commission.
All right, better late than never to let me know. Why don't we start, Keelan, with the invited testimony. And Emily, if you could be so kind, could you call up the invited testimony in the order that you'd like it? How many folks do we have signed up in invited testimony?
It's just two.
Okay, good enough. Why don't you go ahead and start it off?
First, I'll introduce Daniel Newberry from the Urban Forestry Commission. He's on the policy committee of the Urban Forestry Commission. Thanks, Daniel.
Hey, Daniel.
Okay, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yep, loud and clear.
Okay, great. So first off, I just want to say thank you to you, Mr. Mayor, and members of the City Council for the opportunity to present the City's Urban Forestry Commission's views on this particular issue. So, you know, before you today, as you've heard, there are really two proposals here, two major proposals, you know, to amend tree preservation and tree density standards to get rid of commercial industrial exemptions, and then also to reduce the DBH threshold for required preservation or fee in lieu payment from 36 down to 20. I think that there's relatively little, you know, difference of opinion between city staff, Urban Forestry Commission, Planning Sustainability Commission on the second one. So I'd like to focus my comments on the commercial and industrial exemptions issue. So we believe that there really are two primary reasons why all four of these exemptions need to be lifted, not just three, but to also include heavy industrial in what the City Council is going to be doing. And there are really two reasons for that. And I think Emily made those two reasons really clear. And those are climate change and equity. You know, if you look at the map of the heavy industrial zones throughout the city that we saw earlier in the presentation today, there really are huge blocks of land in North Portland with relatively few trees. And it creates a huge heat island effect. So that the surrounding neighborhoods that are frequently low income are really hotter because of a lack of canopy. And so what we're talking about today really is how to preserve the few remaining big trees that we have in those areas. Portland declared a climate emergency this year, and we think that this is really important and that climate change really does need to be considered even more now than maybe last year, because I think everyone's really more aware based on what's happened around the world this year, especially in our part of the country with fires, and how we really need to be doing what we can to address climate change. And, you know, really the more big trees are cut, the more these problems are exacerbated. So why would we not want to lift the heavy industrial exemptions? Well, we heard Emily talk about the city's reluctance to remove the IH exemption, and it's based on the economic opportunity analysis. The current methodology used and scheduled to be updated next year in the EOA does not include either equity or climate change. It's really focused on the supply of industrial land. And we understand at UFC that the city attorney's office believes that there's a risk of legal challenge because, you know, making it more expensive to cut down a large tree can be seen as reducing the supply of industrial land. And this could be seen potentially as a violation of state land use goal number 9. You know, we disagree here that this is a huge problem, especially in light of the fact that the economic opportunity analysis is scheduled to be updated next year. Consider that this whole process of analysis is probably going to have to be done all over again. You are going to have to spend your time. There's going to have to be a big public engagement process all over again when this, you know, issue is going to be readdressed in another year or so. So why not just take care of it now? Because I think everybody's agreed from what I've heard so far that these really are issues of climate change and equity that really do need to be addressed. I think the real tragedy here is that once a large tree is cut, it will really take generations for it to be replaced. And it's, you know, I think as I was saying, since this is going to be redone in a year, economic opportunity analysis, why really wait? One thing we do agree on with the PSC that you saw today that was not in our letter, we really would like you to direct the staff to consider that these issues be included in the 2021 update of the economic opportunities analysis. So I'd like to say thank you for allowing me to speak here. And that's all I wanted to say right now.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And then, Mayor, we have Eli Spivak, who is the chair of the Planning and Sustainability Commission.
Oh, good. Great. Hi, Eli.
Hello. Welcome to City Council. This is not the first time I've testified to City Council, but the first time as the chair of the PSC, and it's also the first time I've done so from a treehouse in my yard, which is almost a 20-inch walnut that was preserved in a development situation because it's a beautiful day out there.
That's awesome.
So I appreciate the City Council took the suggestion from both of our commissions when faced with a fairly simple extension of the 36-inch plus tree regulations a year ago. And so we appreciate that we were listened to and that you brought this project back to us and a chance to recommend it forward with some great work by staff to make some important changes. We support decreasing the tree diameter threshold where fees start to accrue down to 20 inches. That'll provide climate and heat island benefits. And if we're gonna have 36 inch or larger trees, we have to have a strong growth of 20 inch trees to grow into that size eventually. We supporting the area where the tree code applies to the ID1, EX and CX zones. And there was strong support from all the testifiers who spoke to us, almost all of them, for removing the exemption in the IH zones as well. We very much wanted to remove that in our recommendation. And that discussion consumed the vast majority of our deliberations. We fully respect the Urban Forestry Commission's recommendation, but we ultimately decided to recommend staff's proposal that did not include the IH zone. And I want to share the logic of that now. We noted that there are substantial negative environmental, community health, and public health effects of decreasing tree canopy on low-income communities and communities of color who live near and work in industrial zones. Heat island effect and poor air quality are real concerns. We also recognize the value of current and middle-wage job opportunities within these zones for a relatively diverse workforce. And these are jobs that pay well and may not require high levels of educational attainment. Those kinds of jobs are scarce and we need more of them. Unfortunately, providing industrial land capacity necessary to foster these jobs is required based on Goal 9. And we struggle with that. We felt that the 20-year buildable land inventory for industrial development, as currently formulated, makes some assumptions about land area per job and range of employment types that are dated. And when updated, they should be including elements of the Green New Deal so we don't have this pitting of environmental preservation against job opportunities. That seems like a false struggle. This can happen through an update to the EOA, which is currently being outlined. And we're encouraged that that project will go through the PSC and with the City Council. In fact, we've got at least two commissioners ready to volunteer as early as stakeholder identification on that project. And I'm excited to see your proposal to expedite that. We make our recommendation, recognizing that there's some risk, however, that the EOA might never happen, or there might be significantly delayed, or might end up yielding similar buildable land inventory requirements as it does today, still with no room for regulations that enhance tree canopy or expand environmental zones. And there's other projects too, that like wetlands preservation that are relevant to this discussion. Given these risks, we decided that we were gonna ask staff to see if there's a middle ground. Perhaps there's a way that if you have less robust tree protection in the IH zones and pass that today. But that would take additional staff time, cost money, and potentially yield some weak sauce regulations that if adopted might remain permanently even after the EOA passes, and we didn't want to have that risk either. So we're excited to recommend to you this project as staff recommended it. And the first time since I've been on the Planning Commission, we recommended this City Council directive via ordinance as part of our recommendation. And I've read what you've suggested so far. All the improvements, all the amendments you've noted would be considered friendly amendments to the PSC. I'm glad that you came up with them. They only make this better, particularly adding concurrency so that the update to the tree code can happen alongside the EOA rather than waiting until after it's completed, and also expediting it. And I heard comment earlier about one idea of letting city-owned land within the IH zones have tree code apply. That would be consistent with our recommendation if it's the direction the City Council wants to proceed with. And I will leave it at that. If there's any questions, we can answer them. And thank you for taking the time.
Thanks, Eli. Colleagues, any questions? Great, thank you. We'll move on to public testimony. Perfect day for a tree house, Eli. That looks good. All right, who do we have signed up, Keelan? I remember you said 17 people, 2 minutes each. Name for the record, please.
Okay, we actually had one more sign on, so we have 18 on now. We have Robert Salinger first.
Hey, Bob.
Good afternoon. Can you hear me okay?
Yep, loud and clear.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler and members of City Council. Thank you for taking this issue up. We really appreciate the work that's been done to date by the city and the process this has been laid out. This has been a long time coming. We were part of the original Title 11 stakeholder committee that worked on it back in 2009, 2010, 2011. We think the amendments before you today are really positive steps forward in terms of the inference mitigation and also in terms of the removal of exemptions for certain types of land uses. We think all of those are really positive steps forward and agree with the PSC and Urban Forestry Commission that those should all advance. We also support the approach that you're taking on heavy industrial lands. We appreciate all of the amendments that have been proposed today and encourage you to adopt those. We're particularly excited about the idea of coming back concurrent with the end of the EOA and making sure that we do follow through this time, because that was supposed to happen in 2015, the last time the EOA was updated. It didn't, and that's why we're back here today on heavy industrial land. So making sure that when the EOA is updated again, that we really do follow through this time. Those lands are critically important from an ecological perspective, from an urban heat island perspective, from an equity perspective, and to meet the overall tree targets for the entire city. So we can't just write them off. We can't just forget about them. They have a really important role to play, and I'm hopeful that the steps we're taking today will get us there on that issue as well. So again, thanks to Council for their work on this. Thanks to the bureaus, and thanks to the PSC and the Urban Forestry Commission as well.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Solomon Duke.
Welcome.
Hi, I am Solomon Duke, representing the Portland Youth Climate Council. Our group and many others have been working towards a more environmentally just tree code for years. The good news is the city is proposing to remove tree code exemptions for commercial and some industrial land, as well as lowering the threshold of inch-for-inch mitigation of tree removal. The bad news is that without removing exemptions on all zone types, including heavy industrial land, we're ignoring a huge piece of the problem. Can you imagine if the 1971 Oregon Bottle Bill, the first of its kind in the US to offer refunds for used bottles, had exempted all Coca-Cola products? This would drastically reduce the amount of bottles being recycled while giving an upper hand to one of the world's wealthiest corporations. Do not make this mistake. Make the tree code strong like the bottle bill. PYCC is here today to ask that you advise the City Council to remove all exemptions for commercial and industrial land in the tree code, including heavy industrial land. the economic opportunities evaluation used to argue for the exemption of heavy industrial land provides insufficient data that is skewed towards benefiting corporations. It makes an oversimplified assumption that heavy industry would choose to pay a mitigation fee for every tree they cut rather than planting new trees elsewhere. Removing the exemption on heavy industrial land would not take away industrial land, but instead would ensure that industry replants or mitigates the trees that they cut. We need an evaluation that includes well-rounded data regarding environmental and equity opportunities. Jobs should not come at the cost of equity and the environment, but instead, the tree code should allow them to come hand in hand. Forests are smoldering. The ice is melting and entire communities are left to reckon with the effects of unmitigated climate change. We shouldn't be doing just simple equations.
Solomon, your time is up.
Just one more sentence. We need a comprehensive view that takes the health of the environment, community, and climate to heart.
Thank you, Solomon, for your testimony, and thank you for the work of the Youth Council. We really appreciate it.
Next up, we have Piper Weirich.
Hi, Piper.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yep, you sound great.
Okay. My name is Piper Weirich. I'm also with the Portland Youth Climate Council. I'm here asking you to remove exemptions from all industrial and commercial land today, including heavy industrial. Requiring mitigation from only some industrial land protects only some of our city. It seems like Portland city government knows what is right when it comes to addressing climate change, but you also need to know how to stand up to industry and capital. Now is the time to figure that out. Protecting trees on heavy industrial land is critical when it comes to protecting our communities as well as our environment. A lot of the discussion today has been about the connections between marginalized communities, the environment, and heavy industrial land. The environmental hazards due to tree loss on this heavy industrial land disproportionately affect the residents of color and other marginalized communities that live, especially right next door. Industry may provide good wage jobs, but at what cost? Working in these polluted areas also provides major health repercussions and increased COVID-19 risks. Trees absorb air pollution and cool the land, and as well as our remarkably bad heat islands. This is why we must remove the tree code exemption on heavy industrial lands and hold those landowners accountable too. We cannot stop partway, especially as the climate crisis worsens. The EOA itself also states that it doesn't take into consideration the effects on the environment and humans, but that doing so could change their conclusion. We can't keep prioritizing industry over all else and assuming that more land means more jobs and growth. Decisions need to be made without industrial bias, and we can't keep putting this off until different regulations are updated in the future. The climate is being destroyed now. Moreover, removing these exemptions doesn't even take away land or jobs or even necessarily preserve the trees. It just requires industry to also pay the fee or replant if they take down trees. If going against the EOA is not possible, the city needs to ask the state for a waiver on Golden Line so that we can pursue the goals that we've committed to as a city. We need to stand up for trees like they are our first line of defense against the hazards we face, because they are. We need to hold on to what we know is right when it comes to environmental justice, because we are already regretting that we didn't act sooner. We need to use an environmental and equity opportunities analysis, not an economic opportunities analysis, and remove exemptions from all industrial and commercial land. Thank you.
Thank you, Piper.
Next up, we have Deanne Ford.
Welcome.
Hello. My name is Deanne, and I am a homeowner. And I think we're all here for the same reason. We all want trees for our future generations. However, I believe the approach that is proposed will have the complete opposite effect. With the current restrictions and the proposed additional restrictions, I personally am unwilling to plant any trees, as I don't want to have to deal with all the complicated and costly restrictions. With this effect, Portland is going to be left with some very old and dying trees and very few new trees to take their place. My question is, do you want people to willingly plant trees, or are you going to further police our lives through mandatory tree planting and excessive fees and fines to care for our yards? Because this will impact an individual significantly. It's $3,600 if I have a tree that I have to remove. Maybe it's starting to die or have disease. I can't afford that. And that is what would be happening. So I ask you to have a positive approach, such as giving incentives for planting and preserving trees, versus on the flip side, telling us and penalizing us like a police would. We need to look at this in a positive effect instead of having a detrimental effect, because in the end, we're gonna have people who are not gonna be planting trees because they don't wanna deal with this. So let's look at the long-term effect instead. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Next up, we have Ezra Hammer.
Hi, Ezra.
Good afternoon, Mayor. Good afternoon, City Council. Pleasure to be back in front of you again, and thanks for bringing forward this important issue. I'm heartened by all the thoughtful comments so far on the record. I would like to quibble briefly with my friend Emily Sandy's comments that nobody has raised concerns about the increase to the cost of housing. We do believe that we have at least two letters on the record that highlight the recognition that the proposal to lower the overall tree size threshold will in fact lead to incremental costs in housing throughout the city. However, we come before you today with two proposed recommendations that we believe would fairly address trees in development situations. The first, and we recognize this would likely be part of the broader work product analysis, but it's for the city to put some sort of maximum cap on the overall tree fee charged per dwelling unit built in the city of Portland, akin to what the city currently does with the LTIC program. There will be outlying situations, and as Emily highlighted in her report, that will lead to the reduction in the number of homes built for Portlanders, and we want to ensure that in those situations, the city does not create an overly punitive system that ends up harming the production of housing. Additionally, and Mayor, thank you for bringing this point up, we are very concerned about situations where the city requires the removal of trees and then charges penalties to the developers for doing so. My organization worked with the Bureau of Development Services to review upwards of 600 building permits for small-scale housing that were pulled since the current regulations were in place. And we found really two shocking things. One, upwards of 20% of all trees removed in the public right-of-way in development situations were the direct result of inter-bureau conflicts. That's hundreds, if not thousands, of tree inches.
Ezra, your time is up.
Thank you. And specifically with the trees on private property, we saw that situation as well. Thank you.
Thank you. And Ezra, could I get a copy of that analysis? Could you send that to my office, please?
Absolutely, Mayor.
Thanks. I'd like to see it. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Ezra, this is Commissioner Ryan. I'd like to see that as well.
Thank you. Yeah, well, I'll make sure I get a copy to everybody, Commissioner Ryan.
Thanks.
Next up, we have Whitney Doerr.
Hi, yes, thank you. Hello, Mayor Wheeler and Commissioners Hardesty, Udaly, Ryan, and Fritz. My name is Whitney Doerr, and I'm the Interim Executive Director at Friends of Trees. I've been with Friends of Trees for 13 years and have seen the complexities of Title 11 at play over the years. Friends of Trees receives thousands of calls each year when community members have questions about trees, planting, removal, permitting, et cetera. We plant over 3,000 trees along city streets and in private properties each year on the east side of Portland. So our focus is planting and young tree care, but when residents have questions about anything tree related, they come to us. Few know the specifics of Title 11, and it's our work to explain the importance of our city protecting our city trees. As proposed, we support reducing the tree size threshold for the required tree preservation and inch for inch mitigation from 36 inches to 20 dBH. This reduction in threshold will create a stronger incentive to preserve trees in our city on development sites. We lose so much value when our big trees are removed. This reduction will also increase the amount of mitigation funds, which could be used for creative solutions to protecting our urban forest, like purchasing land for large tree protection in critical geographies and more tree planting. As proposed, we also support eliminating exemptions from Title 11 tree preservation and tree density requirements for developments in the IG1, EX, and CX zones. And in contrast, we do not support the proposal to retain the exemptions for trees on development sites in the heavy industrial zones, IH. By retaining the exemption in the IH zones, we're discouraging the city from following on its own climate change and equity goals. We are concerned about those residents adjacent to and who work within these zones. With less protection, tree canopy will continue to dwindle, thus furthering heat island effect and subsequent health concerns for neighboring communities. This is really an equity issue. It's critical that these heavy industrial property lands must also contribute to the protection of existing trees and support for our urban forest by meeting the same requirements that others are held accountable for. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Next up, we have Justin Wood.
Thank you, Whitney. Welcome, Justin.
Hi, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. I hope you guys can hear me okay. My name is Justin Wood, and I'm one of the owners of Fish Construction and the former chair of the Development Review Committee. We're a builder located here in Portland and one of the last for-profit builders that builds entry-level, middle-income housing. We utilize SDC waivers and tax abatement when possible and average 10 to 15 homes a year sold to families, a majority of which lately have been minority families making less than the median family income. I can say that every time a fee or cost goes up on new construction in Portland, it is one step closer for us to no longer being able to provide new houses for working class families in Portland. As one of the original committee members who helped to create Title 11, I sat on that committee with Bob. One of our goals was to balance the needs of development, density, and affordability, along with the desire to incentivize the protection of trees. After the conclusion of our work, a situation came up regarding some very large giant sequoia trees, and our work was amended to provide a threshold to protect significant trees. Originally, the threshold was discussed to be set at 60 inches, then 48 inches, then ultimately ending up at 36 inches. Dropping this threshold to 20 inches is making the choice that we are no longer seeking a balance. The change is prioritizing trees over affordability, density, and the work included as part of the residential infill project and House Bill 2001. I ask you to reconsider this change, and I can tell you firsthand that this will have impacts to affordability and homeownership of middle-income families. And the only thing I'm going to add on to my testimony today is that one of the numbers that Emily gave you was a loss of just 50 houses, and I can't dispute that, but what I can tell you is we're going to lose lower income first-time home buyer houses because these all the costs do is drive us up from being able to do entry-level houses to a higher price point to be able to absorb the cost. So there is an impact to affordability. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Albert Kaufman.
Welcome.
Thank you. I had just taken a bite of a pastry that I went to go get over at Petite Provence and saw that I was being unmuted. So
it never fails. That's part of Zoom now. The minute you put something in your mouth, they call on you.
It was pretty good. I have to say it's a chocolate croissant.
Oh, that sounds good.
Le Petit Provence is still open and it's one of the only stores that I go to. Anyway, thank you all for having us today. I pretty much want to echo what Bob Salinger of the Audubon Society had to say. So those are pretty much my comments. I'm going to keep my comments brief, but just to say that the amount of time that it has taken us to get this far is just incredible. I really just don't even have words for how much time it's taking us to move small things forward when we're faced with climate crisis. And so I guess my main comment would be that we need to figure out ways to speed up the process when we're trying to make positive change for people in the city. The glacial pace that this has taken us years to just to make this small change really is challenging to me as a person who's running out of time, just like we all are. So I really want to encourage the next city council and new city council members to consider the pace of change in our city. And I've put forward a little proposition that you'll probably hear about in the next little while, encouraging us to plant 1 million trees in our parks. And that's for another day, but thanks a lot for having us. And I appreciate you all and all the work you do.
Thank you, we appreciate it. Appreciate your testimony.
Next up, we have Catherine Michelle.
Hi, Catherine.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yep, you sound great.
Okay, so I'm Catherine Michelle, and I'm here on behalf of Trees for Life Oregon. We really appreciate the opportunity to testify. We believe no zone should be exempt from tree regulations and that our tree code should better reflect the value of trees. Why is this? Because everyone in Portland should be counted as important enough to receive the health benefits of a large form tree. Everyone traveling our roads, everyone working in and owning factories, everyone caring for young children and the elderly nearby warehouses and rail lines. It is not enough to have big trees only on one side of a major arterial. Everyone needs the whole street air conditioning that trees the size of oaks and firs provide along industrial roadways such as Columbia Boulevard. Please vote against making industrial zones exempt from tree preservation standards. When we say we want trees for life, we mean life in every sense. Even just one big tree next to where people live or work brings people together. When people are asked, the tree stories are there. Recently, a focus group study of immigrants in Portland's Jade District revealed emotional ties to trees because of childhood memories. Across history and many different cultures, a big tree often has served as a community's gathering place, as an individual's personal retreat. As city staff recommends, please vote to make the development mitigation threshold size 20 inches instead of 36. That's about the minimum size of an oak when it is truly benefiting everyone around its leafy core. Again, as city staff recommends, please remove exemptions for tree preservation in commercial, central employment, and general industrial zones. In addition, again, add heavy industrial zones to the non-exemption list. Consider what trees mean to everyone's health and well-being in their daily and their communal lives. All zones count, all people count, and everyone needs big trees for life.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Laura Sciortino.
Hi, Laura.
Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Yep.
My name is Laura Sciortino. I live in Southwest Portland with my husband and our 12-year-old son. This is my first testimony to City Council. On Monday, I submitted written testimony as well. Thank you very much for considering my point of view. I've been listening very carefully and trying to learn. I'm new to this issue, but I am a Portland resident who loves our trees and cherishes what they give to our city. I agree with Whitney Doerr's testimony, Catherine Muschel's testimony as well. And I am here mostly to speak about the amendment with regard to the inch threshold, bringing it down to 20 inches for private tree preservation situations. I would urge you to consider even going down further to that. When I listened to the gentleman who was representing lower income housing, it struck me that perhaps there's a particular compromise that could be made for developers who are truly developing income that is, housing that is truly affordable. For homeowners like us, the tree code is very serious. It ensures significant trees are preserved, and I'm very glad. They're vital to our city for all the reasons that Emily Sandy presented earlier. Indeed, we are even required to maintain the Douglas firs that reside on the city land between our property line and the road, and I'm glad that we are. About 2 years ago, our neighborhood experienced a development situation that I'm sure is very familiar to many of us. A corner house property was sold and the developer cut down an extravagant number of medium and large trees. Some houses in the vicinity had water entering their basements for the first time. The hillside of magnificent rhododendrons was cleared. A concrete bioswale was installed, presumably to mitigate runoff. It just seems to me that developers should be better incentivized to preserve a larger fraction of the existing established significant trees that we homeowners are already expected to preserve, and I'm glad that we are. After all, we as homeowners are not permitted to remove even one single tree of 12-inch DBH, I believe I'm using the term correctly, or greater, without a city permit, which we may not even get. As I understand it, development situations already receive an exemption.
Your time is up.
Thank you. To remove 2/3 of existing trees. And I would hope that we would at least require them to pay inch for inch for each and every tree that they remove. Thank you very much for your time. I encourage this amendment and even going further.
Thank you, Laura. Appreciate your testimony.
Next up, we have Judy Todd.
Hi, Judy.
Good day. Hi, thanks for taking my testimony and thanks for the work that's gone into this for years and years. A couple points that occur to me. I did a lot of looking around this year at tree issues that were part of a development plan in neighborhoods and small lots where big firs and other large trees came down, which of course changed the character of the neighborhood as well as the character of the final product of the home with really reduced lot lines. I'm noticing large units being built, including multifamily units, with no space for trees of any size to grow, no space for gardens, maybe strips of shrubs or small trees. And that's one of my concerns. I'm hoping that in this process, we are aware that the exchange of value for between a large tree and a replant is almost unquantifiable. The value of really large older trees in our urban forest, I don't know who puts the number on that, because I don't know how you'd begin to count it when they're 60, 70, 80 years old, even some of them over 100 years old. It really doesn't balance out to make that kind of trade when we can save the trees that are the largest trees, including in the heavy areas. So again, I am a proponent of including all four of those conditions rather than leaving the exemptions in place for the heavy industrial. The other piece that I wanted to point to is that currently the low-income housing units look to me, based on doing some research online, that most of those quote low-income start at around 300 and plus thousand. So I'm not really sure anymore when people talk about low-income housing and mitigation and costs, as the gentleman with Fish Construction mentioned, what kinds of numbers he thinks low-income housing might qualify for.
Your time is up.
Thank you very much for your time and attention and your good work.
Next up, we have Allison Berman.
Judy, hello, Allison. Allison, are you unmuted? Allison, you're still muted. And if you're on a phone, try star six, see if that helps.
Can you hear me now?
Great. Yeah,
now okay, we can hear you.
Sorry about that.
No worries, you're good to go.
Okay. Hi, everybody. I'm a Northwest Portland resident, and because of that, I experience all the benefits that trees provide my community. Clean air, shade, and reduced temperatures during the summer heat, and nature right outside. When I head out to explore one of my favorite natural areas, Smith and Bybee Wetlands, I'm reminded that the expansive tree canopy I enjoy at home isn't afforded equitably to other parts of the city because of current exemptions in the tree code that leave out industrial and commercial landowners. They're off the hook from paying their fair share to grow our city's tree canopy. On my typical trip up to Smith and Bybee, I see most of the industrial properties between my apartment and Smith and Bybee are devoid of trees. That includes along Highway 30 and in North Portland neighborhoods along the Columbia Corridor. There are significantly less trees, temperatures are higher, and there's no buffers between industrial activity and neighborhoods. This means that some of Portland's cherished natural areas like the Columbia Slough, Willamette and Columbia River, and wetland complexes like Smith and Bybee are exposed to more industrial pollution. It also means that nearby communities are negatively affected with lower standards of living. Communities like Linton, St. John's, and Kenton experience lower air quality, more expansive urban heat islands, and less access to nature. Also, earlier when frontline communities were mentioned that are most impacted by lack of access to trees, there was a big omission. Air quality directly impacts people with disabilities and can cause disabilities such as asthma among already vulnerable communities. So please add people with disabilities to the list of those who need us to show up today to protect Portland's trees. Current exemptions to the tree code for land zoned as heavy industrial have led to this inequitable tree canopy in different parts of the city. And I really urge council to take action and remove these exemptions to ensure that current and future residents can all benefit from the more expansive tree canopy that I enjoy right outside my door. It shouldn't just be for some, it should be for everybody. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Megan Vandemark.
Thank you, Mayor and Council members, for the opportunity to provide input on the city's proposal to amend the city's Title 11 tree code. My name is Megan Vandemark, and I'm here today as a North Portland resident who lives in the Kenton neighborhood, someone who lives mere blocks from one of the zones which the proposed heavy industrial amendments will impact. First, I want to let Council know that I strongly support the amendments which would require inch-for-inch mitigation for trees over 20 inches and removal of exemptions for tree protections on general industrial, central employment, and central commercial zones. I also want to urge Council to adopt the tree ordinance, which also includes removal of the exemption for protecting trees on heavy industrial lands. My neighborhood is one of the neighborhoods the city refers to when highlighting the unequal distribution of tree canopy in our city and the associated public and environmental health disparities that exist in our city. As the city shared in their own analysis, low-income communities and communities of color often reside in or adjacent to low canopy areas of the city, particularly industrial areas where tree preservation and tree planting are not required during development. The heavy industrial areas under consideration, such as those in my neighborhood, have some of the worst air pollution. Trees are vital to protecting air quality and buffering nearby neighborhoods from industrial activities. These heavy industrial areas also have some of the highest urban heat island effects in our city, something that trees are critical to reducing for not just adjacent communities, but also industrial workers themselves. In the course of the city's analysis, the rationale for not applying tree protections on heavy industrial lands has been a narrow economic analysis that pits our community's health and the health of our region's ecosystem against industrial land availability and jobs. Our residents should not have to choose between their health and the health of their neighbors and job opportunity. The city can do better than this and must. Currently, we provide residential property owners with the choice of either retaining trees or paying into a mitigation fund to plant trees nearby when trees are not preserved. Why are we not requiring the same of heavy industrial land developers and requiring them to do their part to protect the health of our community and its trees? We're asking our city's residents to bear the burden of ensuring a healthy community for themselves while exempting heavy industrial land developers. We must always ask, who is the city working for? Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Felice Kelly.
Welcome.
Hello, and thank you for allowing public testimony today. My name is Felice Kelly, and I'm speaking on behalf of the 350 PDX Forest Defense Team. I'd like to echo the comments from Trees for Life and so many other eloquent speakers today about the enormous importance of trees for Portlanders everywhere. Protecting and expanding Portland's urban forest is an issue of environmental justice. 350 PDX strongly supports removing the exemption from tree preservation and tree density standards on General Industrial 1, Central Employment, Central Commercial Zones, and reducing the threshold for preservation of trees. However, we believe that the tree code should apply to the whole city and strongly urge the city to remove the exemption from tree preservation and tree density in heavy industrial zones. If not now, then as soon as possible through the economic opportunity analysis. The city of Portland recently adopted the Climate Emergency Declaration, and the declaration directs the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability to update regulations that protect and enhance the tree canopy to reduce heat island impacts on public health, particularly in East Portland. The tree code is an important tool to realize this goal, and the city council should take advantage of this opportunity now to make the tree code a tool to fight the history of environmental racism that is damaging the health of Portlanders today. Commissioner Ryan mentioned that the maps of the tree canopy and city temperature tell a story, and it's so true. Unfortunately, it's a story of a history of neglecting the tree canopy in our most vulnerable neighborhoods. Research led by Portland State University Professor Vivek Chandas has shown that Portland has one of the greatest urban heat island effects in the country. And those islands are concentrated in parts of the city that were deemed hazardous by the racist redlining home loan policies of the 1930s and beyond. The last 5 years have been the five hottest years on record, and global temperatures will continue to rise for the foreseeable future. If Portland does not address the urban heat island effect, high summer temperatures will be increasingly deadly for poor people and people of color who live in the hottest part of the city. There is broad scientific consensus that increasing the urban canopy will keep cities cooler. And this is especially true in Portland, where the urban heat island effect is tightly correlated with the tree canopy coverage. I wanted to take a moment and question a couple aspects of the analysis of whether zone IH should be included. First, the analysis extends the paradigm that maintaining basic environmental rights. Oh, okay, thank you. Sorry about that.
Next up, we have Ellen Lax.
Hi, Ellen.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Yep, loud and clear.
Ellen Wax with the Working Waterfront Coalition, hereafter I'll refer to as the WWC. I'd like to first comment on and challenge the narrative that heavy industrial land is adjacent to low-income neighborhoods and communities of color in Portland. Although it's the case in some areas, the large swath of harbor land is encroached upon by higher income neighborhoods such as the Pearl, Northwest Portland, and then are also adjacent to high-end neighborhoods such as Willamette Heights and the Overlook neighborhoods. Second, I'd like to say that if City Council chooses to adopt the Planning Commission recommendation, the WWC requests an amendment to the Commission's recommendation. In their October 6th letter to the City Council, the Planning Commission expressed expectations for the EOA to evaluate Title 11 consistent with city goals, including those related to tree canopy, climate change, and urban heat islands. And I know additions to that have been made through the substitute ordinance. The WWC requests adding other city goals to those city goals listed and specifically called out. We'd like to have specifically call out an inclusion of middle-wage jobs in economic equity goals. Industrial land supply in Portland is limited, and what land is available is very dear. Harbor industrial land is located near water, rail lines, highways, and there's a need and relationship between those transportation infrastructures and the manufacturing and distribution network of the city. In previous planning, Portland has determined that we have a limited amount of industrial land to meet the employment needs of our growing area. The proposed removing of the tree ordinance exemption for industrial land is one of many policies and potential projects that impact industrial land supply. Others include discussions regarding Terminal 2 and adjacent lands, whether to develop it as a ball field with residential and commercial development or some other uses. Studies are also out there regarding extending the streetcar to Montgomery Park through the industrial land areas, updating environmental zone regulations and new regulations, and removing the tree ordinance exemption is just another. The WWC respectfully asks the City Council to consider middle wage job earners and economic equity goals when making critical decisions that impact industrial land supply. Thank you.
Thank you, Ellen.
Next up, we have Ted Labby.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler, City Council. My name is Ted Labby, and I'm the Executive Director of the Urban Green Spaces Institute. I am a resident of the Kearns neighborhood of Northeast Portland, an undertreed neighborhood, but I'm making my comments today beneath the shade of a beautiful native ponderosa pine in a thriving commercial zone of the Dalles, Oregon, which demonstrates that we can have trees and thriving commercial industrial zones. Thank you for your service and the opportunity to comment today. Before I state my brief Title 11 reform comments, let me just state that I support the fall bump amendment offered up by Commissioner Hardesty and Hugh Daly yesterday to repurpose $18 million of general funds from the police to much needed social services. Overspending on police is directly related to the matter before you today because general fund services like parks and urban forestry do not have sufficient resources to do their work. I appreciate the substitute ordinance language that was offered up today on this matter, but I am here today to urge that you follow the recommendations of your Urban Forestry Commission to lift the exemptions on Title 11 on all commercial and industrial zones within the city of Portland. I was one of the folks that had offered up the idea of a middle way at the Planning and Sustainability Commission. The idea of applying some of Title 11 requirements on industrial zones, but there was no time given to the development of these options. As a result, I feel as though you should move today to adopt the Urban Forestry Commission recommendations and resolve issues around how we meet Goal 9 as part of the EOA next year. The last thing I'll say is that I believe that the Johnson Economic Report, although good for telling us that there would be no impacts to residential zone housing, it relies on some spurious assumptions about impacts to the industrial zone, which I think are unfounded. I think there are ways that we can accommodate our Goal 9 goals and Title 11 that will not put us on a collision course. Thank you for the opportunity today.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Ted.
Next up, we have Gwen Baldwin.
Hi, Gwen.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm Gwen Baldwin, Executive Director of Oregon Smart Growth. Thank you for the opportunity today to testify on the proposed amendments to the tree code. Written testimony has also been submitted. First, I'd like to offer some context. Since April, Oregon Smart Growth has shared a variety of specific urgent actions needed to expedite, even just maintain, housing and employment development in our region so it can stabilize and recover. One of the action items in our October 5th letter is a moratorium on, at a minimum, anything adopted should not be implemented until we are clearly in an economic recovery. Beyond the timing concerns, our primary concern with the tree code amendments is the removal of the exemption from tree preservation and tree density standards in the very areas the city has designated for the highest density housing and commercial development, as we communicated to the commission, to both commissions earlier. Removing this exemption will make it very hard to build dense housing and employment projects on sites with any trees, even in the middle of downtown Portland where the city wants density. In addition, the amendments do not accurately depict or address the urban foresters' current interpretations. Now, urban forestry regularly considers a tree planted on private property as a street tree if any portion of the tree extends into the right-of-way, even 1 inch. Developers plan projects in accordance with the private tree preservation standards based on professional surveys showing a tree is clearly on private property, only to regularly find out at the end of the process that forestry has declared it a street tree that must be preserved with no opportunity for mitigation. Any street tree designation should be based on 50% of the tree trunk being in the right-of-way. The language currently says straddling public and private lines. Oregon Smart Growth requests that you slow the implementation of these new regulations and at a minimum drop the proposed removal of exemptions in EX and CX zones and rationally define street trees. Thank you. Together, we can create a more prosperous, equitable, and economically resilient community for all Portlanders. Thank you.
Thank you, Lynn.
And that completes public testimony.
All right, great. So colleagues, this would be a good time for further discussion. And I'll remind you, this is we're not voting today. This is just the first reading of a non-emergency ordinance that I want to give people time for questions or comments. Any comments for staff? Commissioner Fritz, then Commissioner Udale.
Well, thank you to staff for, even in these challenging times, doing such a very thorough job of public engagement and revisions to these proposals and doing what we asked you to do. Thanks also to community members who spent an enormous amount of time on this, including many of the people that we heard from today, the youth climate justice folks, and also Bob Salinger at Audubon, as well as Michael Meskel. Thank you so much.
Commissioner Udaly.
Mayor, I'm sorry, we're not voting today, right?
That's correct. This is a non-emergency.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I thought maybe you were considering an amendment.
No.
Okay, so I'm gonna make a couple comments. One is that I am definitely interested in revisiting State Land Use Goal 9. Historically well-located industrial land guaranteed low barrier living wage jobs, and obviously our world has changed significantly since then. We've seen cases where state law challenges our local land use visions, as has happened with Title 11. Environment and living wage jobs should not be competing priorities. And I think this project has given us an opportunity to explore whether we should ask the state to revisit Goal 9. So I'd like for us to work with Office of Government Relations. I think that was addressed earlier. And at our upcoming legislative priorities work session to consider ways that we can advance this conversation with our partners in the state. And I'll just end by saying I'm really pleased with where we've arrived today. When this item first came to council last year, I was really concerned about the lack of engagement and consultation with our community partners and environmental advocates, and wasn't prepared to support it without taking a look at the exemptions for industrial lands and strengthening the tree, the protections. So I'm really happy with where we've arrived. Acknowledge that we have a couple more hurdles to jump over, and we can come back and correct concerns advocates expressed around heavy industrial lands. BIPOC and low-income community members are more likely to live in neighborhoods that are adjacent to industrial activity, and as a result, experience adverse health impacts. And knowing the health outcomes linked to tree density, I think it's necessary that we explore every possible measure to expand those benefits to these neighborhoods. And finally, tree code remains a priority for my office in the coming economic opportunities analysis. And I'm going to be keeping a close eye as the Bureau conducts the EOA. And I look forward to hearing recommendations around how we can make sure we're taking steps to protect and expand our urban canopy across the city. So congratulations, Commissioner Ryan. great presentation, and I look forward to voting on this next week.
Commissioner Ryan.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. Thank you, colleagues, for those great comments. I also want to acknowledge the three bureaus that have been working on this. I'm learning that it's well, there's like some great creative tension that goes on as the three bureaus try to come to land it with their different points of view, and all valid. And I thought it showed up really well in the testimony today. And the visuals were awesome. So I wanted to acknowledge that as well. It really did tell a great story in terms of the tree canopy and its effects on our residents. I think the one testimony that was fascinating to me, and I guess because I keep hearing this from neighbors, is when is that tipping point where the regulation prevents somebody from actually planting trees? And I've just been hearing this. And so I thought one person did comment on that. And I would never want any of our policies that are for improving the tree canopy to have an adverse effect. So I just wanted to call that out. And anyway, I look forward to further dialogue between now and the second reading. And I thank everyone once again.
Yeah, and if I could just add my words to those good words. And then Lindley, I see your hands raised as well after Commissioner Fritz. I want to thank everybody very much. That was a terrific presentation. It was very detailed. As always, I learned a lot. I want to thank the people who provided testimony. That was good feedback on these proposals. It gives us a lot to think about, a lot to chew on between now and the second reading. So thank you for that. And I want to particularly thank our incredible staff, Emily and others, for their presentations. Very well done. Lindley, did you have a point of order before we get to Commissioner Fritz, or can I get to Commissioner Fritz first, please?
The only point of order I want to raise is that there is still a need to, if council's plan is to make a final vote on this at its next reading, council would need to address the choice in Directive A. I just want to make sure that's out there in case you weren't aware of that.
Yeah,
that was what I was just about to say, actually, Lindley. So if we could get clarification from Emily, please, as to what we need to do there. Oh, Lindley.
I'm glad to jump in because I don't see Emily up on the screen right now. Directive A asks council to either adopt Exhibit A, which is the Planning and Sustainability Commission recommendation, or B, which is the Urban Forestry Commission recommendation. And so council would need to simply move, second, and vote on some, either saying, I'd like Directive A to reflect Exhibit A, not Exhibit B, or vice versa.
So I need to say,
Go ahead, Commissioner.
I move that Directive A be amended so that the reference is to Exhibit A only.
I second.
Second.
We all second. Commissioner, thank you, Commissioner Ryan. Further discussion on this point? Commissioner Daly has her hand raised. Commissioner Daly? No. Commissioner Fritz, did you have another comment on this? No. Okay. Call the roll on, what are we calling this, Lindley? Is this an amendment or just a preferred choice?
Look, let's call it an amendment to Directive A, please.
All right. It is somewhat unusual. Dan, you'll be pleased to hear. We haven't actually done this in 4 years. We haven't had a multiple choice like this. Please call the roll on the amendment.
You, Daly.
Hi.
Fritz.
Emily, I appreciate seeing you back on. I apologize. The whole getting back on when you're called upon unexpectedly. I know. So, teamwork. Commissioner Ryan, what a quick study you are. You know, you grasped what we're doing here and moved the amendment, which is, you know, exactly what we need to do. So, just to folks watching, we're not saying we're not going to do further study. The rest of the ordinance says that we're going to continue looking at these issues, and indeed there will be more. So I look forward to having staff come back. You will have staff come back by the end of March. Thank you. I'm going to say it again next week, but Jen Cairo, our city forester, has been hugely important throughout this entire process. And so I really appreciate it. So I'm happy to vote yes on the amendment. Aye.
Ryan.
Yes. Thank you, Emily, Sandy, for driving this. And you have some more miles to go until we get to March. And I also want to acknowledge my team who was staffing me in real time, or I never would have been able to say what I just did earlier. So I am grateful, and I say aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. Thank you, everybody. Appreciate it. So this is a first reading of a non-emergency ordinance. It moves to second reading as amended. Does that complete our business for this afternoon, Keelan?
Yes, it does.
And Lindley, you're satisfied we've done everything right? We've dotted the I's, crossed the T's?
Yes, it is ready for second reading whenever it comes back.
Awesome. All right. Thank you, everybody. That was a great session. We are adjourned. Thank you.